I've recently been to one client and they told me they made the calculus if they would put all the policies on a pile, how high it would be, and it would be the Eiffel Tower.
Welcome to Compromising Positions. I'm Leanne Potter, Cyber Anthropologist and Head of Security Operations for a major retailer.
And I'm Jeff Watkins, a cybersecurity enthusiast and CTO for a major tech consultancy. Together, we're the tech podcast that asks non-cybersecurity professionals what we in the industry can do to make their lives easier.
And help make our organizations more prepared to face ever-changing human-centric cyber threats. Welcome, 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 listeners, both devoted and newcomers. Welcome back for Season 3 and welcome back, Jeff.
Yeah, it's good to be back. I mean, it's fair to say that we've been a bit bereft on a Thursday during our break.
I certainly have. I really love doing these shows, but it's been really great to use that break not only to get this season in ship shape, but also to start planning for season 4. Can you believe that? But on that note, who have we got in this week?
Well, this week we're joined by Dr. Bettina Palazzo, a business ethics expert. She works with compliance managers to create a culture of integrity that focuses on the leadership and behavioural dimensions of compliance. She states that unethical organisations make people unhappy, and we couldn't agree more. So she's dedicated her life's work to helping organisations create cultures that make work fun and meaningful.
Now, ethics is such an important subject when it comes to business because poor ethical decisions can mean poor compliance, and ultimately that can lead to poor security decisions. So how do you build a culture that is comfortable with having honest conversations about ethics?
Well, that's what we'll explore in this episode, Rules Without Relationships Create Rebellion, Why Ethics Matter in Cybersecurity. By the end of this episode, you'll learn how to create a speak-up culture so that people can raise cybersecurity concerns with you.
And learn how to build a compliance influencer program. And no, unfortunately, that does not mean trips abroad at beautiful locations surrounded by policy documentation for the gram.
Shame.
Indeed it is. And learn how cybersecurity teams can not only be ethical role models, but also give people a reason to care for the big question. And that big question is why we do the things we do to protect them.
Yeah, we love this chat and we think you will do too. So sit back and enjoy our interview with Bettina Palazzo.
Dr. Bettina Palazzo, welcome to the show. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you so much for having me. So what should I say to introduce myself? Yeah, I'm German. I live in Lausanne, Switzerland by chance because I find many useful things on conferences, and I found my husband on a conference and I found jobs on conferences. And this is how I eventually ended up in Switzerland. And I help companies and nonprofits to make compliance into a topic that everybody wants to be a part of.
Brilliant. And how do you go about doing that?
Well, that's actually two questions. So how do I go about this and what do I do day to day to get there? So on the big picture, how do I go about it? So at the moment, when I started out with business ethics, there was no compliance in companies. And then it got hijacked by the lawyers. And well, we can use this, but we also need the ethics part. We need not only the regulations and how to bring your people to follow these regulations. You also need to show them the positive side and the values and the ethics. And I'm very happy that after 25 years of being in the business, this is finally becoming mainstream. So I'm trying to help with the ethics turn in compliance. And I do this by focusing on mostly on how to create a speak-up culture, because this is how you can normalize compliance and ethics in a company, because if nobody's talking about it or they're too scared talking about it, it won't work. And ethical leadership, because what we've seen in the last 20 years is that companies said, okay, we need this compliance stuff. We're a little bit annoyed by it, but we need it. So let's create a department that nobody likes. And it's their job to take care of this. But yeah, that of course doesn't work, because even if you have a huge team of compliance people, you can't be behind every person, because the real compliance and data security, that's why these things are very similar, they show up with your people. And if they don't know what to do and how to know when something is off or when there's a red flag, it's an upward battle that you won't never win. And that's why my third topic besides leadership, speak up culture, is communication. Because what I've seen a lot is that compliance professionals have a hard time, like data security, data privacy people, to bring across why is this important, what's in it for my target group, who are my target groups actually. So I developed a program, it's called the Compliance Influencer, that looks, that tries, so a little bit like to, like you, Leanne, marrying different worlds, yeah, like anthropology and digital life and making it human, because that's the thing, and that's why we have all these troubles in data security and people still do so many stupid things, is that we don't talk to them like humans, capable humans, and who want to have good intentions. Not like, oh, you're probably stupid or you're probably a potential criminal, so this is why we need to show you what to do. And it just doesn't, it's not fun for nobody. And we can make it much better when we use all the stuff that's out in different domains on how to communicate and how to explain well and how to motivate people.
Absolutely.
That's my mission.
Can I ask you a question about ethics?
Yeah, of course.
So when I think of ethics, my mind automatically goes to protecting against something bad. When I think of ethics, I think of negativity. Mm. I think...
Mm-hmm.
You being the ethics expert, there has to be good ethics, right?
That's actually my fourth mission, is making ethics sexy again. Because...
Oh, I love anyone that wants to make a topic that's normally seen as a bit scary or a bit dry sexy. So I fully support that mission.
Yeah, I mean, have you watched The Good Place?
I have.
Yeah, I totally love it because it shows how one not really ethical person... Well, I spare you the story, you have to find that out yourself. And she, Eleanor, finds out that ethics is actually something cool and useful, that it's great to be a good person, because it helps you to live an authentic life, because you know what you want. This is important for me. Even I will not do this even if it's profitable for me, because I have decided this is not what I want to be, who I want to be. And it creates better human relationship, because people usually appreciate it if you are reliable and honest and trustworthy person. It's and it gives you peace of mind, because you have already decided how you want to live, more or less. Yeah. So just so if you say, for me, compassion is important, then many messy situations are easier. Or if I say honesty is important for me, then that gives you the motivation to stick being honest. Well, of course, not brutally honest, but on the right level in all kinds of challenging situations in life. And you can transfer all of these benefits to companies, because also companies face all kinds of, in their decision making is even more complex, because it's collective decision making. But at the moment, what companies are trying to get a grips with our VUCA complex world and stay on track with their ethics and avoid risks and protect their reputation is producing lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of policies. I've recently been to one client and they told me they made the calculus, if they would put all the policies on a pile, how high it would be, and it would be the Eiffel Tower. I hope
they didn't say that with pride. I hope they were like, we're ashamed of this. We want to change it.
No, I think that's a general problem with bureaucracy. It proliferates. You start with something and think, okay, we need a policy on corruption and bribery, and then new topics pop up, like use of social media. We didn't have this in the early 90s, or then recently all companies are very busy creating sexual harassment policies, so it just keeps adding up. And then you have new regulations. Now we have the EU whistleblowing regulation, and in Germany we have the new supply chain law. So it just gets more and more and more. And to a certain extent, you need this so you can show it to the regulators. But your people will not read these policies.
No.
There's even scientific studies that show that people don't read these policies. So what you have then a lot, and it's the same for data privacy, data security, people don't read the policies, especially because most of these policies are not very reader-friendly. They're hard to understand. Who has time to read complex sentences three times, and you still not 100% sure what you're supposed to do. So that's one important thing. What I see what companies do is trying to, well, they have their policies just so they can tick the box, we have a policy, but then they create one-pagers, they create trainings. So you need attractive communication around it, and you need to repeat it all the time in a way that treats your people like capable adults. Because that's especially one thing for all things tech. There's a lot of shame involved. If I click on a phishing email link, it's so embarrassing, because we all want to see ourselves as capable, tech-savvy adults. But we know the attackers are getting smarter and smarter, so it's, an upward battle. So here, for all these topics, creating the psychological safety is super important, so that people actually come to you if they're messed up.
And that's for me, my job, that's so important, is that I need to be able to remove that shame and embarrassment or fear, because some organizations are quite strict, and they're like, you click on this phishing link, which anyone could do, you know, I've fallen for stuff myself, and I work in this industry, you know, they are very sophisticated. Yeah. But, you know, some organizations, you click on this, then you're getting fired, which is totally the wrong approach, because all that leads to is obscurity.
Right.
I think the industry's changed a lot, because mentioned to tech industry in the UK, in consultancy, if you'd started talking about ethics 20 years ago, people would have looked at you like you had maybe three heads or something. Like, what are you even talking about? You know, you mentioned numerous different very key concepts there around a mixture of ethics, communication, like, and that, how people absorb and learn things, and also how it should create psychological safety. I wonder how many companies are actually equipped to deal with all these things that are quite social science-y and not like as a tech consultancy. I don't believe we have any social scientists or anybody with a background in that. And I think it feels like a very complex thing that a lot of companies have just kind of sleptwalked into.
Yeah, we all stumbled into this. It's also a generational thing. So if you are more like Gen X or boomer kind of thing like me, or if you had to learn all this the hard way. But I also see it with my kids, that they are kind of naive about it. It's not that they are better prepared than me. They grew up with it, so they don't ask themselves about so many questions. At least that's my impression. I don't know if that's empirically proven.
I think there was a study recently that did show the very latest generation, actually some of the, they're not necessarily the least informed, but they're not necessarily the ones who behave the best when it comes to cybersecurity measures. They're taking risks, maybe because there's so much familiarity, whereas maybe people of our generation may be slightly more skeptical of things.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so I'm glad that this confirmed.
So you mentioned a couple of times about things like information security. What's been your experience with cybersecurity teams? What have you found that's been challenging, and what has been good?
Well, of course, they're super aware of all that can happen. So they're a little bit, I guess they're like parents of teenagers who know about all the dangers and are struggling with convincing their teenager that this is real, and that teenagers don't want to really accept this. And one way they could make their life easier is learning to explain better, because they're such experts and they're so deeply in their technical expertise, it's very, very hard for them to still understand how it feels not to know what they know, which is called the curse of knowledge, and it's widely researched. Yeah.
We quoted that in another podcast quite recently, and I was actually going to mention that as well. I think that's very interesting that this keeps coming up as a topic.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and the fun study behind is that they asked people to clap a song, and the metaphor of what's happening, and because you hear the song in your head when you're clapping it, people said, well, I think 50% will recognize what song it is. In reality, only 2% recognize the song. And that's the same thing, because if you say something like GDPR and you have a whole universe of information in your head, and it's very hard to not presume that your target groups are on the same level. And so the first step to overcome the curse of knowledge is that you know that there is the curse of knowledge, and find out on what level is your target group. And then it's really not so hard. You need to find out how can you explain the what in a way that everybody understands, preferably with examples and stories that come from the real everyday experience of your target group. Most of the time, communications about data security and compliance is dear all, and you just dump it on everybody. And that's super frustrating because they need to find out, is this relevant for me? And if it's not relevant for you, you're basically training them to not think that you're relevant for them. So the what, and then the why. The less people know about your topic, the more you need to explain the why, because that's kind of the key to motivation. So and here for me, the ethics comes in, because you need to peel away the layers of an issue and go to the ethical core, because that's your why. Mm. So if you say data privacy, you have to explain, then the usual reaction is, oh, I don't have anything to hide. But everybody has something to hide. And there's a reason why privacy is a human right, because if people have access to your private information, they can mess with your life. And there's a reason why we vote anonymously, because we want to protect this part too, so we are free. So it can infringe very much on your personal freedom if other people have access to your data. And if you explain it like this, that will stick to their minds, and it will also motivate them to follow your rules. Only then you explain them the how. What happens mostly now is you just drown people with the how.
Yeah, absolutely. That email that comes through on a Friday afternoon before the end of the work week that says, oh, when you come in on Monday morning, we're going to change everything that you've ever known in the organization in terms of the policies and process, how you access your emails, for example, things like that. You're like, but why is the first question? Why are we changing this? There's usually a good reason, you know, 9 times out of 10, normally a really good reason for it. But in terms of business communicating that good reason, it's just not there. People don't care about the how. Actually, if you can make the how as minute as possible, in my opinion, the better. Right. The experience exactly. Will be, you know, not that people like having things done to them, but if it's something that maybe has an impact, it's easier to swallow if you don't actually have to do much legwork to it. But that's not the consideration usually.
Yes. For experts, the why is so clear that's why they forget about it.
Yeah, precisely.
It's understandable. I recently had a training, and somebody shared a very fun example about this, that their work security had put signs on the company parking place saying, in the morning, you're supposed to park your car backing in. So you can, in the evening, so you can get out easier. And that was just a new rule. In the morning, you back up to park your car. And when you leave, you go out in at front. And no explanation. Mm-hmm. And the reason obviously is that you have, when you are after the day, a work day, you're kind of tired and you have more accidents if you leave your parking spot in reverse gear.
Right.
But that did not. So there was a big outcry, and everybody was not happy about this kind of rule, and they felt treated like children. You don't tell me how to park my car, right?
Well, that's precisely because there's some activities we do that are almost out of bounds. So don't criticize my driving is one of them. But I think of things like, even as banal as, oh, lunch boxes for children. So, you know, if you give your child a pack lunch and then the school turns around and says, right, in a pack lunch now, I want this type of sandwich, I want one piece of fruit, one juice. And then when you get this list from the school, and you're like, can't tell me how I feed my kids, and what's to say that I'm not feeding them well? And there's some things we ask people to do that are very emotive, that without even thinking about it, we trigger that instinct in people to go, this feels like a criticism, when it's not. It's right. Just that the people breaking these rules have
trying
not considered
help.
The impact. Yeah, they've not considered that. Actually, some of the things we do, particularly in work, and I think it is becoming more and more prevalent, this understanding that when people come to work, because, you know, a lot of us work in the knowledge economy now, so we're paid to be creative, to be autonomous thinkers for the most sense in quite a lot of organizations. Because the people are autonomous workers, if you start telling them how to do that job, it becomes very emotive. And yeah, I just think it comes into play quite a lot that people creating these rules and policies don't recognize that people are not just numbers anymore. People are very sentient and cognizant of the work they're doing.
It goes even deeper, as I call this the rebellious teenager mode. And it's explainable because we first get in contact with rules and prohibitions and norms when we are kids. So if we are adults and somebody talks rules and norms and what you should not do that, we have the impression they are treating us like kids and they are the parents. And if you have a teenager at home, you know where real world happens. If you talk to a person who thinks they are adult, but you talk to them like kids, you have resistance and rebellion. So and you can overcome this by checking all your communication as you explain the why. And you have an inclusive tone that gives the other side the impression that are treated like capable adults.
Absolutely. And when you were speaking then, I just immediately thought the kind of power dynamics between the security team and other people in the organization is that paternal. And it's not even go ask your mum. Your mum might be a bit more permissive. It's actually no. We're the really firm type of kind of paternal influence there in an organization. And we do see rebellion. And
yeah.
I think it's to be expected if we don't communicate in, as you say, an inclusive way, if we don't explain the why. And I think that's definitely something that I think our listeners will take away is when they're writing any kind of new processes and policies, and as I say, probably valid processes and policies that need to come in to face the threats we're facing, but just take a moment to actually think about the why and think about the tone as well.
Yeah, the tone is super important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another question along the lines of ethics. Is cybersecurity an ethical concern? And I'm thinking both from the perspective of our employees that we're trying to serve, the business we're trying to serve, and our customers.
Yeah, as I said before, we need to kind of peel away the surface. So sometimes ethics is hidden under some layers. And yeah, so the, what I just said, so the why is it the ethical core of cybersecurity is protecting your data and never forgetting that there are always people behind the data, right? So I guess that's also something how you can communicate to people in your company why it's important to protect the data. So remember, this could be your credit card data, your photos on your phone, your bank account, your health reports, all the stories, all your illnesses you ever had, your browser history, the company's confidential knowledge of that. So I guess if you look at data privacy from an ethical point of view, it helps a lot to make people care. And that's what you want. What we see at the moment mostly is trying to motivate people to play by the rules with extrinsic motivation. Like if you, in the extreme case you just mentioned, like if you click on this phishing mode, you will be fired, to intrinsic motivation. I want to protect my data, everybody's data. And that's the important thing. Of course, well, you need some form of consequences, but all this talk about zero tolerance, as Jeff so rightly said, does nothing than just create fear and pushing things under the carpet of corporate silence. And that's exactly what you don't want.
I think there's a kind of a value system. I found there's a value system thing in play where I think it goes back to the whys. Sometimes people don't necessarily understand the value of something. And mm-hmm. I feel like this is where we really struggle with the actual, once it's built into somebody's value system, people are much more, from my experience, people are much more likely to act in accordance with good practice because they value it. And if they don't value it, they just go, yeah, not interested. Not interested in good passwords. Nobody will guess my password. It's 1234. That's long enough. And if somebody doesn't value it and understand it, then yeah, it really, really falls apart. From a point of view of leaders in business, and what are some tips, or how can we actually become more ethical role models?
Yes, so, but I want to still relate to what you said before, that so how can we make people understand, so how can they value something? And here what you need to do, and we know this from marketing, you do need to do some deep dive into the thinking of your target group. So what do they value, and how can I show them what's in it for them if they follow the rules? How is their life easier? So that's the mantra of marketing is always, who is my target group? What is important to them? What are their challenges in data security, compliance, whatsoever? And what is my solution to them? Because what we do now is mostly pushing rules on people. But if you turn it around and get into this marketing mindset, then you can create a pull, and that would be so much easier. It's not easy to get into this mindset, and you need to talk to people, find out about them, create a relationship, because that's also one very important mantra of mine. Rules without relationship create rebellion. Right, I love that so much because everything you can apply it to your teenager, to your partners, to business, everywhere. You can't just come across, this is the rule now because I say so. If the sanctions are pretty high and the likelihood that the sanctions will be enforced, you can be lucky with that, but it's just not sustainable. And that's something that probably, so to get the segue into leadership, that's something that also leaders need to understand, that their people, they don't look at compliance or data security on how to behave in their day-to-day. They look to their direct superior. And that's something that leaders, they mostly have not really learned how to be an ethical role model. But at the same time, every code of conduct says leaders need to be role models, but we don't help them to be role models.
But again, documentation for documentation's sake on that. We've written down you're going to be a role model. So there you go. You're going to be a role model.
Yeah. I mean, of course, you have some people who are naturals, but most are not. And there are many dynamics, if people have a certain level of power, that are not very good for ethical leadership, like they become more impulsive, they think they're always right. There are studies that put people in MRIs, and but you can see that if you become powerful, it actually changes your brain and you become less empathetic and you become more creative of coming up with smart excuses for bad behavior.
Oh, that was so good. So good that, yes, we had to make this one a two-part. So if you want to know more about Bettina, do check out the show notes for all her contact details, including information about her compliance influencer program.
Compromising positions bingo again. The curse of knowledge got mentioned.
It did, and it comes up a lot. But the curse of knowledge really does impact how we go about interacting with others. And I don't just mean in cyber. Most of us are victims of our own curse of knowledge. We always think people know way more than they actually do. Or vice versa, we think we know more than we actually do.
And that plays precisely into the rebellion piece that Bettina was talking about. With poor communication or implementation of rules, you're just going to have people push against them.
That's why it's so important to get lots of people from all sorts of backgrounds and perspectives on this show. I feel like each episode we're chipping away at our own curse of knowledge and hopefully leading us to a path of open-mindedness and better security.
Yeah, which people really seem to enjoy. I think it's a lovely time to mention a review we got recently. Big thanks to CyberArcus, who left us a lovely 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. They wrote, Leanne and Jeff guide you through the dynamic realm of cybersecurity.
Ooh, I like that. It kind of sounds like a quest, which I guess it kind of is.
Yeah, their insightful discussions demystify complex topics and ignite fresh perspectives. With interviews from industry leaders and deep dives into emerging trends, I highly recommend it.
And I highly recommend people keep leaving us these reviews because it really does help people know if they should invest their ears in us. So thank you, CyberArcus, and to all those lovely people on LinkedIn that have been doing some fantastic posts about us. And just before you leave, we have one final request.
Yeah, we've been nominated in 3 categories for the European Cybersecurity Bloggers Awards. Now we need to get clicking and vote for us. It's people's choice, so every single vote counts, and we only have until the 22nd of May before the voting closes.
If you've always rooted for the underdog, consider us your Rocky as we go up against some titans of the cybersecurity industry. Win, Rocky, win!
Yeah, I mean, win compromising positions win, you mean?
Yeah, I get carried away. I love Rocky. Anywho, don't let the only votes we got be from my mum, which she said only took her 30 seconds to vote for us, so I'm not taking any excuse that you haven't got time to do this for us. So if you're listening right now, open up whatever app you're using, go to this episode, scroll to the show notes, and find that link and vote for us. We'll really appreciate it.
Yeah, we do indeed. So catch us next week for part 2 of our conversation with Bettina for our episode, The Dilemma Game.
Can't wait. See you next time. Keep secure. And don't forget to ask yourself, am I in the compromising position here?